The Myanmar military is again carrying out attacks against its own civilians, attacks which may constitute war crimes.
New hostilities erupt in Myanmar. It's Monday, April 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Bangladeshi children vulnerable to climate change, challenging maritime boundaries. Hong Kong moves toward extending extraditions, human tech networks, and filmmaking for kids. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The main United Nations Human Rights Agency expressed concern Friday about an upsurge in fighting between Myanmar's army and guerrillas of Rakhine's minorities' Arakan army, especially attacks on civilians by both sides. It says it has received credible reports of the killings of civilians, burning of houses, arbitrary arrests, abductions, and other forms of abuse. Ravina Shamdasani, a spokeswoman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, said in Geneva that the agency had credible reports of increased violence in the area.
The Myanmar military is again carrying out attacks against its own civilians, attacks which may constitute war crimes. The 3rd of April attack was carried out in an area that had seen large-scale displacement of Rohingya civilians in recent days. We have been able to verify with some certainty that there was a helicopter attack, that bombs were dropped, and that these seven civilians were killed. There was an attack by the Arakan army on several police posts, and the Tatmadaw, the army of Myanmar, then responded with very strong force, and we received information that instructions were given to them to crush the Arakan army. We call on the Tatmadaw and the Arakan army to immediately cease hostilities and to ensure that civilians are protected. Humanitarian access to all areas of northern Rakhine must be urgently restored.
Shamdasani said recent fighting in Rakhine State has led to the displacement of more than 20,000 civilians, as past incursions are still being assessed.
As the international community is taking steps towards accountability for crimes against civilians in previous years, the Myanmar military is again carrying out attacks against its own civilians, attacks which may constitute war crimes. The consequences of impunity will continue to be deadly.
Shamdasani says all victims in this week's attack were Rohingya Muslims, but she notes civilians of various ethnicities have come under fire in Rakhine and neighboring Chin State. She tells VOA the Rakhine Arakan army that is fighting the Myanmar military recruits mainly from among the ethnic Rakhine Buddhist community. She says the group and its issues are distinct from the Rohingya Muslim community.
This is an armed group that was formed, I believe, almost a decade ago, and they've got their own grievances about, the lack of proper governance consultation by the central government with these communities. They have economic grievances, all sorts of gripes with the government about injustice that they have been suffering through the years.
The United Nations spokeswoman says their complaints are quite different from those of the Rohingya Muslims in the same region who are suffering from systematic discrimination. Rakhine is best known as the site of a brutal counterinsurgency campaign by the military against Muslim Rohingya minority, which caused more than 700,000 to flee to neighboring Bangladesh. The Arakan army, which is aligned with Rakhine's Buddhist population, seeks for autonomy for the region. Shamdasani said the civilian victims included Buddhist Rakhines and Rohingya Muslims, as well as other ethnicities. The UN Human Rights Office is calling on the warring groups to immediately stop their hostilities, to ensure civilians are protected, and to grant humanitarian access to all areas of northern Rakhine. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. No breakthrough expected in EU-China summit. Leader of new Thai party charged with sedition. The Philippines says one Abu Sayyaf hostage escapes, one drowns, third shot. Efforts underway to help Rohingya in Bangladesh. Ahead of weather and the next monsoon season. Tourist numbers double at North Korean marathon. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The UN Children's Fund says climate change in Bangladesh is threatening the lives and futures of 19 million children, or about one-third of all children under the age of 18 in the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the UNICEF report, A Gathering Storm, Climate Change Clouds the Future of Children in Bangladesh.
The report forecasts a grim future for millions of children who live in Bangladesh's flood and drought-prone lowlands in the country's north and in the storm-ravaged coastline along the Bay of Bengal. They are the areas most likely to be devastated by floods, cyclones, and other environmental disasters. Included among the 19.4 million vulnerable children are nearly 500,000 Rohingya refugee children. They and their parents fled to Bangladesh's Cox's Bazar area to escape violence and persecution in Myanmar. They are living in fragile bamboo and plastic shelters, which will not be able to withstand a climatic disaster. The report's author, Simon Ingram, says climate change will have direct implications on children's lives, especially the poor, who are most at risk from its devastating impacts. He says more than 6 million climate change refugees have migrated from rural to urban areas. He warns many of the children who end up in Dhaka and other large cities are forced to fend for themselves.
Many children being pushed into very hazardous forms of child labor. Many girls who end up being pushed into taking early marriages because their families can no longer look after them. And there are other girls who also end up in what is clearly a flourishing and expanding sex trade in the cities. Girls who are left with simply no other outcome available to them.
Despite the magnitude of the problems ahead, Ingram says the children he met during a visit to Bangladesh are not fatalistic. He tells VOA they're very resilient and determined to take their future into their hands. He says more and more youth activists are coming to the fore and becoming agents of change.
In the report, you can read about one particular network down in the south of the country where there is something like 1,500 activists who go out to communities, helping people understand risks that face them, helping them basically get ready for whatever might be around the corner in terms of a climatic shock.
Ingram says this sort of work is expanding and getting the recognition it deserves. He says Bangladesh as a whole is pulling together to meet the climate challenge. The report is calling on the international community to support the government in implementing a range of initiatives aimed at shielding children from effects of climate change. It says children must be put at the center of any response. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, May 18th appears the most likely date for Australia's next election, at which the Conservative government faces an uphill battle to win a third three-year term. Government sources tell media that Prime Minister Scott Morrison would not call an election Sunday, which had been widely anticipated. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're starting out a brand new week with us here on VOA Asia. Maritime scholars are saying China is withholding details on the boundaries of its vast claims to a resource-rich sea contested by five other governments because it distrusts international law and wants to ensure control over tracts of water that it considers crucial. Exactly what Beijing claims in the South China Sea surfaced as an issue March 7th, when Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad called on the communist leadership to define its so-called ownership. Malaysia, the Philippines, Brunei, Vietnam, and Taiwan contest all or parts of China's sovereignty claims over the 3.5 million square kilometer sea. China today uses a nine-dash line to define its claims to about 90% of the sea that stretches from Hong Kong to Borneo. It has upset other claimants over the past decade by creating artificial islands for military use within that line and passing Coast Guard vessels through foreign exclusive economic zones. Political analysts like Carl Thayer, emeritus professor at the University of New South Wales in Australia, say China's plans to expand in the area could be threatened by more specific details that would let international organizations or other countries set boundaries.
China has had this calculated ambiguity for years. They claim all the land features in their adjacent waters. That's not a legal term. China's permanent presence everywhere.
Malaysia, among others, want to know China's end game because Chinese Coast Guard vessels ply the sea's Spratly Islands, where all six claimant governments hold tiny islets. Thayer says China keeps a permanent watch near Malaysian-held Laconia Shoal and challenges the movements of vessels sent by the Malaysian state-owned energy corporation. In 2012, China took control of a shoal in the Philippine Ocean exclusive economic zone, angering Manila. 2 years later, the placement of a Chinese oil rig in a tract claimed by Vietnam touched off deadly anti-China riots near Ho Chi Minh City. China had been pressed for details of its claims before Malaysia had asked. The U.S. State Department said in 2014 that a position paper from China that year failed to clarify the nine-dash line. One point of contention is control of waters inside the line, but overlapping another country's 370-mile-wide exclusion economic zone. China backs its nine-dash line with survey expeditions, fishing activities, and naval patrols as far back as the 15th century, but clashing with United Nations Convention boundaries enforced since 1994. Yun Sun, East Asia Program Senior Associate with the Stimson Center think tank in Washington, says China sees no urgency to discuss the details of its maritime claim now because no one else in the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations is asking at the moment.
I don't think China would do anything. The Chinese now they have a pretty good claim that they say that, well, we are negotiating COC with ASEAN. So anything other than COC is not going to be on China's top agenda.
Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this story. Coming up, Hong Kong takes legal steps upsetting many of its residents. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, and partners are scaling up emergency preparations to help hundreds of thousands of Rohingya refugees withstand a second monsoon season in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh. Heavy rains are expected in a few weeks. Aid agencies are racing to shore up flimsy shelters. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Hong Kong took its first steps last week toward allowing extraditions to China, prompting warnings from across the political, legal, and economic sectors that it could have significant legal and economic repercussions for the autonomous Chinese city. A bill introduced before the semi-democratic Legislative Council last week will allow Hong Kong to extradite to countries including China on a case-by-case basis. The bill is opposed by the city's democratic lawmakers who say Beijing could use any number of crimes to extradite activists, journalists, and other political so-called troublemakers, despite assurances from Security for Justice John Lee. Claudia Mo is a democratic legislator.
The fundamental bit is we have no trust and no confidence in the judicial and legal systems on the mainland. And if they want to play ugly, dirty, whatever, they can name anyone, you or me, for any packaged, any sort of coated, politically coated crime, and extradite you back to the mainland.
Hong Kong, a former British colony, has one of the most respected legal systems in Asia, while China is regularly criticized by rights groups and Western governments for its poor legal track record. Beijing, however, often uses charges like tax evasion and other economic crimes to prosecute human rights lawyers and activists. It also has not shied away from prosecuting foreigners on politically motivated charges. Canadians Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, detained in December, are currently facing spying charges in what is widely seen as retaliation for the arrest of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou in Vancouver. Hong Kong is the Asia headquarters for dozens of multinational firms as well as media outlets, but its international reputation could be damaged if the extradition agreement proceeds, according to groups like the American Chamber of Commerce, the Hong Kong Bar Association, and the Hong Kong Journalists Association. Hong Kong's Security Bureau removed 9 economic crimes from an original list of 46 extraditable offenses following negative feedback from the business community. Philip Dykes, chairman of the Council of the Hong Kong Bar Association, says even these changes have failed to assuage fears.
It seems to me that the concerns reflect anxiety about the actual criminal justice system in England and how adequate it is to protect people who have fallen foul of it. We've heard many complaints that prosecutions are sometimes influenced by political motives, that the judiciary is not independent, that defense lawyers are hard to get by, etc., etc. If those are the concerns, then logically they should be concerns for other offenses too.
The Bar Association has also questioned whether the bill's case-by-case approach to extradition would become the de facto law between Hong Kong and China, sidestepping input from the legislature that would be required in a long-term agreement. The Bar Association says while Hong Kong returned to Chinese sovereignty in 1997, it deliberately did not sign a long-term agreement with Beijing at that time because of the fundamentally different criminal justice system operating in the mainland. Changes to Hong Kong's extradition laws, however, were motivated by a dramatic murder case last year when a Hong Kong man allegedly killed his pregnant girlfriend while on holiday in Taiwan. An island democracy that Beijing considers to be a renegade province, Taiwan does not share an extradition agreement with Hong Kong, prompting the government to take action as it was not able to prosecute him for murder. Our thanks to Aaron Hale in Hong Kong for contributing this story. This news from VOA Asia, twice as many foreigners as last year gathered in Pyongyang Sunday for the city's annual marathon. Tour firms say the reduced tensions are seeing visitor numbers rise in isolated North Korea. Around 950 Westerners entered the event compared to about 450 last year. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, networks like Bluetooth connect our devices easily and effortlessly. But the area that these portable networks cover is big enough to make them hackable. Now a group of engineers from Purdue has solved that problem by turning your body into a network. Kevin Enix explains.
More and more often, we're connecting things to our mobile devices via networks like Bluetooth. And most of these things, like smartwatches and fitness trackers, are attached to our body. But those Bluetooth signals extend well beyond arm's length. And Shreyas Sen from Purdue University says that makes them hackable.
It is becoming increasingly common to have smartwatches, fitness trackers, and even more wearable devices like head-mounted displays, etc. And all of these are interconnected using the body area network, where we are using the electromagnetic spectrum to communicate among these devices. People around the room can snoop on these signals and do malicious things.
The problem is that Bluetooth signals can extend from the body by as much as 10 meters, accessible to someone walking or sitting nearby. Sen and his team have turned the human body into a communication system that's incredibly secure because it only extends about a centimeter beyond the skin. It also uses nearly 100% less energy than traditional Bluetooth networks.
Our research on human body communication focuses on, for the first time, containment of the signal within the body, so that someone who is very close to the body but not touching the body cannot still snoop the signal.
The security implications are impressive. The system also imagines the future possibility of a simple wearable device doctors can use to monitor a person's health continuously, perhaps dispensing medicine or tweaking implanted devices like pacemakers.
I can see this changing humans' daily lives in terms of human-computer interaction or healthcare, remote monitoring throughout the day. So the fact that I see a path of this technology impacting a wide variety of people in their daily lives is the most exciting part to me.
The Purdue team has multiple patents on their technology and is working with government and industry players to miniaturize their tech into a tiny wearable circuit. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Children can do more than just watch films. They can learn how to produce them. That's according to Vanya Pettigrew, the founder of Root Branch Productions and Film Academy. 2 years ago, she started a program to teach elementary school students how to make a documentary, an initiative that couldn't have happened without the support of an enthusiastic principal. Faiza El-Masri visited Lockerman Bundy Elementary School to learn more, as VOA's Carol Pearson narrates.
This is the third year these children are taking part in a documentary filmmaking class.
You want to line the subject up.
3 times a week, they get together to brainstorm, tell stories, and write. They also learn the behind-the-scenes skills.
You want to always make sure you listen for the click. They're learning framing and composition and rule of thirds and all these other kind of technical things. They're learning how to set up the camera, how to use the camera, how to use the audio equipment.
Along the way, they are learning important life skills.
What is one thing you wish people understood about you?
So I really play a lot.
We really find the value in teaching documentary style because, as I simply put it, documentaries are real people talking about real issues. So this is an opportunity for them to have voice as a young person, to exercise youth voice, to be able to advocate for themselves.
My name
Youth
is
Truth was the group's first project.
I am in the fourth grade, and today my topic will be about how it's people killing other people.
I just listened to these children express themselves.
You want to know what I'm tired of?
They talked about all the different things that they were tired of. They were tired of, like I said, people being mistreated by the police. They were tired of violence in their neighborhood. That film had gone on to be screened at the youth segment of the Maryland Film Festival here in Baltimore. It won the Audience Choice Awards at the Born in Baltimore Film Festival.
Last year, the group produced iReady, a song about standardized testing that's now being shown in schools in Baltimore City. The lyrics were written by school principal Kimberly Hill Miller. She's a big supporter of the filmmaking class, which she says gives students a chance to develop speaking and listening skills.
I am noticing that students are able to communicate better than they did before, prior to the program. They are participating. They are showing respect to one another, giving each other eye contact when they are engaged in discussions in class.
Quiet on the set.
Today's project involves self-reflection and communication with classmates.
Sometimes they misunderstand me. Like I said, when I say stop, they take that as an assault, but I'm a loving and kind person. I really am.
It might really help us express what we want to do. Could do a lot of other things if you try them. It mostly gives me confidence.
Confidence, teamwork, and creativity. Skills that will help these kids become filmmakers or anything else they want to become. For writer Faiza El-Masri in Baltimore, Maryland.
Nice and slow.
Carol Pearson, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You know, each and every day we tell you you can hear our program on VOA Asia Facebook. But did you know there's another Facebook page you can find us on? It's VOA Burmese. And we thank everybody in Myanmar who has listened to our program today via Facebook or wherever you happen to be listening to it around the world. We thank you very much for joining us today. You know, we'd love to hear from you. You can write to us, voaasia@voanews.com is our email address. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.